Welcome to A Writer in Italy, the podcast. I am your host, Michelle Johnston, and this is a little share in the world of travel, books, art, and lifestyle. I live in Australia, yet have long had an attraction to the Mediterranean countries for as long as I can remember. This inspiration has fueled my creative life and given me incredible joy over the years as an artist and a writer. And that is why I have created these shares on journeys that have been made, books that I have loved, and cooking adventures inspired by wonderful food writers. You can find all show notes at michellejohnston.life and follow me on Instagram at A Writer in Italy, where you can find all of the meanderings and indeed the lure of Italy as the ultimate muse. Thank you for joining me. I love having you here for the journey of Muse Italia. Welcome back. I am making more of a profound effort at just sharing stories and moments along the way. And every now and then I get that little bit of a response within, like, oh yeah, I've got something to say. I guess that's today. Time will tell. I was laughing because yesterday I sat down, I thought, okay, I'll record the audiobook. And I had a mild headache. It was just sitting there. And then I discovered something. When I went to read it, my Italian, any of the Italian words that I use in the book, I was so rusty on. And I thought, this is not good. That means I haven't been to Italy recently. True. Secondly, that means I am way out of practice. And I just thought, this is not good enough. So I'm going to spend the weekend listening to an audiobook on how to speak Italian, just getting into that linguistic, you know, like that same vernacular and everything. That was trying me a little. Then also the second I thought I will try and do this, the guy next door started up with his lawnmower. And I was like, this is not a good sign. So I just went, okay, today's not the day. But the thing is, I've just painted another room and we've put like a sofa bed in there for visitors. It's a really nice, beautiful lounge. And I'm thinking that maybe that will be my space to record things. So potentially I might turn that into a studio for recording the book next week and like completely soundproof it. So that's what else I'll be doing this weekend. I'll be looking at everything on YouTube to soundproof a room, because I think if I want to make this good, I'm going to have to make a bit of effort. You know me, I do everything like on a wing and a prayer. I just get a little mic. Half the time I don't even use my earphones. That's why you always hear the cockatoos, the dog, life interacting with me. But I'm a natural girl. That's the way I like it. I had the most beautiful chat with Roz Belford the other day for her book, Children of the Volcano. I wish I could share it this week. I just loved her book. And it was so crazy because I was sent this suggestion of one of my listeners, and she obviously knew about it. And Roz is a travel writer. She's been a magazine journalist for years. And the second I saw it, I got that little bit of a, ooh. And it was funny because, like, I haven't really gone after anything for a while. And I suddenly got this feeling of like, I need that book, without knowing anything about Roz, that she'd been travel writing for 20 years or any of that. And then I got in touch with her and she sent me to her publicist, which was cool. And the publicist was lovely, but didn't send me the book straight away. And so she was just lining up the time to get the podcast, recorded. And I thought that she might send me the book, but she'd probably just forgotten because she was busy getting the Zoom call sorted, which I thought might happen more like in late May or early June. So I was cool. But then I saw the book, Emiko Davies had it in her stories that she'd received a copy. And I got this hit of jealousy, like this bang in my stomach. And I jumped on that message straight away and I messaged the publicist and I said, I really need that book. Can we organize this thing with Ross? And I was very direct. It was really very impulsive of me because I'm normally like, oh, la, la, la. Anyway, and then she sent me the book straight away and just said, oh, yeah, I was just trying to line it up and, you know, rah, 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 which was cool. It was no big deal. I wasn't bothered at all. Like there's still plenty of time, in other words. So there wasn't definitely no rush. But the second I opened this book, I just got like this feeling of like, this is the most beautiful book. And now I understand why. I just totally got why I was having this feeling inside of me that I needed it. Like that impulsivity was really trying to say, go and get your hands on that book because this is important. And anyway, so, you know, it came into my inbox straight away with a PDF. So I was very thrilled. Thank you to the publicity agent there. And she was like onto it. Anyway. And then when I just started to read it, I was just like, oh, this is so beautiful. The writing and the story. And I honestly can't wait to share this podcast because Roz reads from the book as well, and she reads for ages. Like she just reads pages and pages, and you could just tell she's such a beautiful storyteller. But it's just a wonderful story because it's really about her when she was in her early 40s after the breakdown of her relationship with her girl's father. She's kind of not sure which direction to take. And she ends up back in London and it's dreary and it's expensive. And she's like, I don't think I want this for my girls. I don't want it for me. And she makes this decision. And it purely came about because one of her magazine editors sent her a request about doing a piece on this tuna massacre, which was in Sicily on an island. And so she's like, maybe I'll look for a place there. And so obviously she knows Italy well. She's traveled there. She's written guides for Italy in the past. And she knows Italian really well. I'd never asked her how she got to know her Italian actually, but I think that Italy was always on her radar. It was on her radar from the first chance she got to go from London because she's British. And so yeah, she just obviously is natural with language as well. So she was very comfortable, you know, with this decision because it was a leap, but it wasn't a total rude shock because she had spent a lot of time in Italy over the years going back and forth. Anyway, I just love the story of a woman who is at the crossroads. It's a definite fork in the road moment. She's got these two young girls. I mean, they're like, I think about 6 and 2, don't quote me. Anyway, to do that is kind of hardcore because, yeah, I mean, at the same time, it's probably the right time to do it as well if you're going to do something like to get that foundation going. And so she goes there to do this piece and then finds herself a little apartment, and the story's a little wild, so she'll talk to that and I won't say much more about it, but she ends up staying in Sicily for quite a while and then lives on an island, changes to a different island, and then much, much later goes onto the mainland of Sicily. But this book, Children of the Volcano, is really about that year that she spent with her children. And this is something interesting, which I love. She did not write this book straight away. She wrote it about 20 years later, maybe like 18 years later. And I found that really beautiful. And I know why. It's because she wanted to make sure her girls were in a good space, that their lives had turned out, in other words, and that she felt comfortable with revealing a story about them because, you know, to take your young children, it's a bit of a wild card choice. And she knew that, like she knew that it might not work out. It might damage them in some way. And she was never happy with the school system in these small islands that were, you know, in its own way, they weren't up to date with education. They didn't even want to have books in the room. So you'll read that if you get the opportunity to read the book. Like, that's the thing. Like, you can imagine it's going to be this beautiful experience, but it's not always what you expect because there is a culture that's quite patriarchal. There's a culture that's in the old ways. You know, the old customs were still very alive back then, 20 years ago. And because you're in these really small villages, which are purely Italian, you know, like they're not got this big mix of international people coming through, or they do, but they're holidaymakers. They're not living there. So she was a bit of a change maker at the time. Like, she was trying to educate her girls. And fortunately, she's very intelligent. So she, you know, always got books on things and she helped them evolve their education anyway. And I think that's probably why it worked, because she had the ability to educate and share this natural world that she was very much enjoying herself. It was very healing for her. And obviously she's going to talk to all of this. But, you know, I wrote down a quote from the book and I don't think she'll mind me kind of sharing it here, but it just really moved me. And it's, quote, Ros Belford, "At some point in life, you learn that there are times when to be true to yourself, you have to accept that some people may hate you. And instead of rushing to soothe and placate, to compromise and be reasonable, if you believe the path you have chosen is the one you need to stick to, you have to be ice cold and resolute." End of quote. And yeah, I just think that sometimes we do. Like, sometimes we upset people with the knowing that we have, that we know what's best for us in a way. And we know we're going down a certain path and it's not conventional and it's not logical, but it means so much to us. And you know, what is life if you can't have those moments? You know, like, it's not all about just, you know, meeting the bills and all that jazz. You know, it's not just all about those linear pathways. Anyway, I really resonated with the book, obviously, but I just love a story of a woman who's doing it her way. And those books will always sing true to me. And it wasn't easy either. It wasn't this beautiful, you know, she didn't have a lot of money. She didn't have a lot of support, but she made friends on the island and that made it all so special and real and beautiful for her young family. And she made it work, in other words. But it's been written 20 years later, and I guess I'm waxing on about that because sometimes it does take time. These things take time. And it's very beautiful because her mother, who recently died, pushed her to write the book. And maybe it was just something there that was on my shoulder going, you know, read this book. This is an important one, because I really feel like this book will be very special to people. And I kind of imagine that people will love reading about this other world in Sicily, because it's not the everyday typical Italian novel, let's say, or Italian story or traveler story, let's say, like memoir wise. It's about a different place and it's about another world, and it's one that I'm very curious about. I have a funny feeling about Sicily too, that when I get the chance to go back to Italy, there's a few things I want to do, but I do want to spend a really good chunk of time in Sicily. Fortunately, I'd like to think that things are going to open up for me in the next 2 years for some real travel and some real exposure to Italy, more than I've had, more time, more true experience. It's definitely looking like it'll change. And Yeah, my husband's finally getting his hip operation in the next month, assuming that that doesn't end up changing. The date's been set, so that's exciting. And he'll have a bit more ability to say yes and come with me as well, because that's kind of kept me, well, there's a few things, but it's definitely kept me from making a family decision because, he wants to enjoy it and all that jazz. So, and also I've got Livy in school for another 2 years to finish her education, so 2.5 years. Anyway, we'll see what happens. But I do kind of have that percolating feeling that there'll be more opportunity around the corner. And I'm in one of those funny stages too, where I'm dealing with my dad's estate and doing all that solicitor stuff that you have to do. And that doesn't exactly happen in 3 days. It happens in about 3 or 4 months. So once that all gets cleared off my agenda and there's closure around that, that'll be quite freeing for me as well. So I'm really excited about that. But it's funny. So I sat down and I was going to do my audio. I mean, I wasn't feeling that it was all going to come pouring out of me. I just kind of knew yesterday that I might have to wait and just get my Italian vocab down again and do a little practice and some Italian lessons. But it's very funny. It's kind of winter. I don't think I was ready for winter this year. Like, well, it's not winter. It's the middle of autumn and it's gotten cold. We took ourselves away for nearly a week up to Queensland. I just needed some sunshine. I really did. I was just like, no, we're not going south, we're going north. So that was beautiful. And then we've come back and the garden is yellow. It's full of autumn color. It's actually very beautiful. And the medlar tree has all of its fruits. A medlar is a very strange fruit to me. Strange fruit. D.H. Lawrence described the medlar as wineskins of brown morbidity. They're a strange fruit because to get the pulp out of them and everything, like they've got these little seeds. So, like, people will make it into a jam, but you've got to let them kind of go almost moldy to get to the fruit. So it's an odd one, and but they're very beautiful. And when the leaves turn, they go like this extreme bright red, fluorescent red. It's such a beautiful tree to have in the garden. And I know they date back to Renaissance gardens as well. And like a lot of French gardens will have them, and we have one in our orchard that was already there. And so does my neighbor. Hers is actually very beautiful. And quite a large tree. I saw one at the nursery as well, and the fruit just looked quite spectacular. They'd gotten bigger than mine does. Anyway, there's been a number of years I've gone, oh, I'll pick them all and then I'll turn them into something. But then the second I start trying to get to the pulp, there's so many seeds, and I'm like, this is a pain in the neck. Like, it's just a headache. So it's not exactly one of those ones where you go, oh, just chop up this and it's done and I can throw it in the saucepan. Not so much. So anyway, I'm enjoying falling leaves, you could say, which also brings with it the pleasure of cleaning them up. Other than that, it's a lovely time. Yeah, I'm doing some research on making an audiobook. So that is an interesting experiment as well. I'm ready for it. So I'll be throwing down yoga mats onto the floor in the room and making it a soundproofing studio. I don't know how far I'll get. Who knows? Time will definitely tell. And it's so funny because I had this dream. It must have been last night because it's right on the edge of my thoughts. I dreamt I was in a garden and I pulled a persimmon, like a beautiful orange persimmon off the tree. I could just grabbed it and bit into it. And then I was like, oh, persimmon, they must be in season soon. And I think more traditionally they will be in season in about 6 weeks. Like, it's more like midwinter even though growing houses will obviously have them in the shops or the markets soon here. And then I thought about it and I was like, what's that symbolizing? I remembered that I wrote about them being in the gardens, in the Medici gardens in Rome with my book. And then I was like, oh, I'll look up the quote. So I looked up the quote before and I've written, at this elevation, the whole city is spread out in front of you. I can see church domes, rooftop gardens, palm trees and cypress dotted about. In the cityscape, they are green salutations, and what is more, there are persimmons dangling from radiating branches. Beautiful orange jewels that seem exotic and proud to live in Rome. I think the connection is me doing the book in the next 3 or 4 weeks and putting it out there. I've kind of got a date that I would like it to be out there in terms of sharing it, being the 23rd of May. And then yesterday I found out that Rich has his operation the day before and I'm like, oh, that's useful. So anyway, I'm still really happy that it's happening. It doesn't matter. I can be flexible. I have been flexible. I've been very flexible. I've been rolling with the punches for years. So we'll go with it. It's all good. He just needs to have this done and he'll be much more mobile. I guess it's just delayed him in committing to big things because it's sore. It gets really sore now for him. 2 years ago, it wasn't great, but now it's definitely becoming more chronic, you could say. So anyway, that's family life for you. There's always something that you're juggling with family life. Like it's not just one thing, it's 10 things. But that is the beauty of it all, isn't it? That I think when the time comes when I get going with proper traveling again and everything, I'll just be so grateful. I'll be pinching myself all day, every day, that the gratitude will be very much in my grasp, in my pocket, you know? It'll be really beautiful. Anyway, it's all good. It's something to look forward to, right? And what else? Yeah, I'm looking down at notes and I see that I've said, sweeping floors in paradise. That's a quote from Roz. Oh, boy. And then I also have a conversation with Kimberly Sullivan on her book, Rome's Last Noble Palace. And we had a great chat a few weeks back as well. And I started to edit and then I guess other things started to happen. So I'll go back and get on with that. And yeah, I'd love some book suggestions. Who's got a beautiful book at the moment they might like to share with me? Otherwise, I'm wondering if anybody has any beautiful suggestions on writers, something they've really enjoyed reading in fiction land or nonfiction land. I would enjoy hearing from you. I'm really still enjoying the book Desiring Italy and all of the different writers that I've been exposed through with that book. I mean, it's such a beautiful book. I could just sit there and read 7 pages because it's got lots of extracts of different women writers who have fallen in love with Italy and written travelogues. And that book is just genuinely beautiful. And it's so funny to me that I just never knew about it. After all these years of keeping my eyes on these inspirations along the way, it was really kind of crazy to me that I just didn't know about it. But anyway, I pick it up all of the time and read little excerpts and learn about these women's lives that have really felt joy and connection there, you could say. So other than that, that's all I've got for today. And yeah, I'll keep you posted. Take care and I'll see you soon.